speaking of butter and ham, and I'm so good at segues, aren't I? We've got our two-part investigative series on leftovers, Christmas leftovers, what to do with them. It's driving a lot of people nuts. And we're so lucky here at 2SER Radio to have Leanne Caldwell, who is a gastronomer and a former caterer. She's also a producer here on the 2SER Daily Show. And she's just an all-round expert in all things on food. For those of you who've just joined us, part one you missed, she talked about basically what to do if you're catering for a big event and you want to avoid having leftovers, what to do about storing leftovers. Now we're going to talk about what we can actually do, how we can actually consume leftovers. So, Leanne, welcome back.
Thanks very much for having me.
Okay, so you've got we've got all these turkey, curry, or whatever you have in your fridge. Now, what ideas do you have in terms of how to make it? You know, we've obviously all overeaten in Christmas, and we've had so much of the similar sort of things. How do we make it a bit more interesting for the next days ahead?
Well, that's true. Sometimes we do get over food, and Christmas is a time to get over the turkey after a day or two. It's perfectly fine to have leftovers. In fact, I plan to have leftovers when I do the catering. But what I really want to avoid, and what most people want to avoid, is waste. It's wasteful of money, and it's not good for the environment. It's just entirely too decadent that you throw away food that can be used and sometimes reused. So one of the foods that I'd like to talk about are meat and seafood, because they're very expensive. So there's almost never any leftover prawns. Just in my catering experience, you just were always...
There's never in history has there been a leftover prawn.
Exactly.
I mean, who would not eat the left... Who did not, yeah.
They're just so delicious, prawns, and they're versatile. But what is left over when you prepare them is the shells, because most people buy them whole in the shells, either green or cooked. So you can actually do a lot with the shells. You can use the heads as well, but there is a risk with chronic ingestion of prawn head stock, for example, because of the dioxin that's stored in the head. So let's just talk that. Let's just act as if this is reasonably rare thing. But you get the prawn shells and you get the head and you cover it with some cold water. You put in, say, a bit of onion, maybe a little bit of tomato or roast tomato, even if you've got that. And you cover it with water and you simmer it for about half an hour. You can also add in some fish spines. That'll give it a nice gelatinous quality. But if you do add in the fish spines, then don't cook it for more than about half an hour. And that's a pretty good rule with seafood stock anyway. Once you've extracted the flavour from that, you then strain it off and then you can reboil it and reduce it till you get the consistency that you want. Now, once you've got that prawn stock or seafood stock where you want it, then you can start adding things to it. So you might have some frozen seafood dumplings in the fridge that you have bought ahead of time or you have them there. You might have lots of herbs like coriander, some chilies. So you can start adding to it so it's not a thin, watery thing. It's a substantial meal. If you serve it with bread or rice or something, you've got a complete meal there. Meat is a different thing. You can do different things with meat. Obviously, you can make a stock from the turkey bones or the ham leg. Everyone knows about pea and ham soup, that kind of thing. So you can use the bones to make a stock. But what can you do with the flesh, the actual meat that's left over? Well, one of the things that you can do is what we talked about before, and that's make a curry. Now, what you are going to have to guard against is overcooking that meat, because if it's already baked and possibly was even overcooked and dried out the first time, it's going to be more the case. So you need to add in back moisture and you need to add in back some oil so it's got a nice texture. Or you could go in the other direction and cook it further, maybe finely chop it and fry it so that it's quite crispy. When you think about it, look how popular pork crackling is, crispy, crunchy. So you can actually fry things off to the point where they are quite crunchy. Now, what can you do with that meat? Well, you can do grill sandwiches. Benchtop grills are really popular, so layer in something nice on the bread and put on the meat. When I say something nice, maybe a chutney or some kind of a paste, a vegetable paste or something like that, and then grill it so it's nicely browned and you're happy with the temperature. So that's one possibility. Another thing you could do is...
Actually, just going back, though, in terms of those two options there, with a curry, though, when you put something in spices and stuff, will it stay longer? Will it last a bit longer?
That has been perhaps mythologized. Uh-huh. There is this idea that the reason why Indian food is so spice rich and curries and everything is it was because a way of extending the life of a meat. That's not really true. Mm-hmm. there are some antioxidant and antibacterial properties, but you wouldn't want to be banking on that. We've got refrigeration now, so we can afford to control the amount of spice and the quality of spice that we have in our food. Some people have got acid problems and they don't really like spicy food. Other people are absolutely chili mad, and chili is something that we can actually get addicted to. So you've got to bear in mind that, you know, kids, you know, will tend to tolerate less chili as a general rule. So you've got to, you know, factor that in mind. Who's your audience? Who are you actually cooking for, and what do they like? And can you make the dish so that people can customize it before they eat it, so it's exactly to their taste, which in turn reduces food waste.
And customizing, you spoke of prawns basically, when you have prawns shelled and using the shells basically for broth. Or, but sometimes they actually serve the prawns with the shells on them. And I was interesting actually, you being a bit of a food and culinary expert here. What's the etiquette if I'm at a party or a dinner party or a date or something, in terms of having, when I'm served prawns with the shell on them, there's a lot of tasty meat inside the shell. Do we generally just eat the prawn that's visible, or can we dig in and eat the shell at a dinner party?
Well, in a business context, I wouldn't advise that you suck, you know, every last morsel out of the prawn shell. But a lot of cultures really value an enthusiastic embrace of the food, and they want you to be noisy and show your appreciation and make some mess on the table, and that's quite a desirable thing.
Bone marrow too, I think, you know, people sucking that.
Exactly. So I don't dislike that at all. In fact, I remember a dinner party where two of the guests picked up the dessert plate and literally licked the plate in front of me. The man's wife was disgusted, but I thought it was wonderful. It showed, you know, great enthusiasm for the dish, and I was more than happy to have that. In the case of prawns, what you've got to worry about is when you break off the head, that some juices can spurt. So it's not a bad idea to have a napkin there on your chest to prevent that. But I would say that the more important thing is that you remove the vein. Prawns are known as bottom feeders. And if you ever peel prawns, if there are any blowflies in the area, they're going to come in. So I suggest to people that they shell their prawns over a bowl that's set in another bowl with ice, that you pay attention that the doors are shut and the blowflies, you know, don't come in.
Well, speaking of that, actually, another problem that people have with the leftover foods is the fruit flies, I think they're called. The little things that
barflies.
Barflies. How do we deal with them?
They're very challenging. They adore alcohol. They adore vinegar. And they breed in water. So one of the best things you can do for prevention is make sure you don't have pools of water lying around. So when you've done your washing up, you wash down the dish board and you make sure there aren't any glasses or cups of water, things around soaking. If you do have to leave something soaking, then make sure you put detergent in that water. That seems to repel some insects.
I have heard, I'm not sure if this is an old wives' tale, that you can use wine and you just dunk a few holes in like Glad wrap, and because they're, as you said, they're attracted to alcohol, so they go into the glass and then they drown. They basically get drunk, maybe, and drown.
And they can't find their way out because the entry hole is too. Yeah, so that is one strategy.
Yeah.
Another strategy is to cockroaches. They're very attracted to beer. I saw a bottle with a cockroach in it on the way here this morning. So you can actually use those strategies. You can use those foods to, you know, attract insects. Mm-hmm. But that's a different, you know, way of reducing food waste. So so the prawns. Devein the prawn. And when I'm peeling prawns, I snap the head off and I try and remove the vein in that one single movement. You find with farm prawns, they've been prepared for slaughter, and so they don't really have stuff in their gastrointestinal tract. But it's pretty important to not eat the vein. That's quite classy. I'd knock back a prawn that had a vein in it.
Yeah, it's pretty gross, actually. But yeah, any last tips in terms of people there? You've mentioned about what you can do with meats and prawns. Any tips for, for these people who still have these fridges and pantries full of leftovers?
I favour one-dish dishes. So the one that I'm thinking about is a pilaf, which is many countries in the world have got this. I like the Iranian style. So what I would do is...
What exactly is pilaf? Can you tell us?
Pilaf, it's a layered rice dish. Mm-hmm. So it's... you could do it so it's a complete meal, so protein, starch, vegetables in the one dish. So... say you heat up some olive oil in the saucepan, like a cast iron vessel, and you put in the meat if it's raw and you're going to cook it from scratch, so you brown it in that meat. If it's already cooked, then I'd hold it back for later on. You might like to brown some onions at that point, anything that needs a fair amount of cooking. Then you add the spices and then you add the rice. So let's say a cup of basmati rice. So you soak that in this in the spiced heated oil so it really soaks up. And then you add the water or stock. So I might add 2 cups of stock to 1 cup of rice. And then I bring that to the boil and stir it once more and then reduce the heat or put on the lid and then reduce the heat. And after about 15 minutes, it's pretty well cooked. And at that point, I might add some beaten egg or I might add some meat that's already cooked. I'll put the lid back on and I will cook that for another 5 or 10 minutes.
This sounds a little bit like biryani. What's the difference between palav and biryani?
Yes. Not that much difference. Uh-huh. Not that much difference at all.
Palav seems to be sort of more mushy where the rice is almost blended in with the... Is it? Or
no, not if you're using basmati rice. Uh-huh. It wouldn't go to that extent. And you don't actually want to overcook rice because you... If you overcook it, you raise the glycemic index, which means you have your blood glucose has a stronger response to it. So it's better to just have it perfect. Basmati rice is not a cheap rice. It's very valued for its long grain and its fragrance and everything. So you don't really want to make it mushy. That said, it's actually quite a clever strategy to cook these pilaf dishes and then what's not eaten is then refrigerated, and that process is called gelatinization, and it also lowers the glycemic index of the rice the next day. So if you cook it properly, ideally you'll have a rice crust on the bottom of the dish, which people love. In all cultures, they love the burnt bits. Everyone likes the burnt bits, and they fight over that. So that's actually quite desirable. And sometimes I've even made a soup out of those burnt bits. I've left water, the saucepan soaking, and the rice has softened the... The water has softened the rice, and then I'll just heat that up and I'll add some herbs and I've got, you know, another meal from that dish. So a pilaf can be a perfect meal, particularly if you serve it with a nice fresh salad, maybe a little bit of chutney as well. Another thing that you can do with your leftovers, vegetable and meat, is turn them into what's called an egga or a cuckoo. What we might call, Italians might call a frittata. So that's when you combine the vegetables and the meat and then you pour over beaten egg. And you put that in the frying pan until it's done, and then you'll flash it under the grill to make sure it's beautiful and brown on top. And you might serve that with yogurt or sour cream, fresh vegetables, some herbs, some chutney, and it's a complete meal.